Today's sponsor is Datadog, a real-time monitoring platform that unifies metrics, logs, and distributed traces from your cloud containers and orchestration software. Datadog's container-centric monitoring features allow you to track the health and performance of your dynamic container environment. The container map provides a bird's-eye view of your container fleet, and the live container view searches, groups, and filters your containers with any criteria, like tags, pods, or workspaces. To start monitoring your container clusters, sign up for a free trial today, and Datadog will send you a free t-shirt. Visit datadog.com/container-cloudcast to get started. That's datadog.com/container-cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And as I hit record on this, it is the middle of September, and probably from a news standpoint, there's two big news articles we need to talk about, and we're going to go ahead and jump right in. First of all, VMware Explorer, formerly known as VMworld, happened recently, and Alex William over at the New Stack put together a really good piece kind of highlighting some of the less covered aspects of it, but of a particular interest to our listeners. And so this is less about virtualization and less about infrastructure, but more about cloud native, about containers, Tanzu, and also the rise of what they're referring to as a platform engineer. So a platform engineer, of course, is somebody that is building the platforms for the developers, because you see a lot of companies these days, how do we talk to developers? I want to talk to developers. At the same time, they may not be the ones doing the purchasing at times, or they just don't care because they don't care about the platforms underneath. It's not something they think about on a daily basis. So, interesting article. It also goes in to mention just the dev experience in general and VMware's history there. And they also mentioned Backstage, which is an open source project VMware uses to support its developer experience. They mention Pivotal and the history with Pivotal and the spin in and spin out. And they mention Heptio and a good friend of the show, Chip Childers, who is the chief open source officer at VMware, has some things to say in the article as well. So definitely worth checking out if that is of interest to you. And for our second article, the other big thing going on in the industry right now, if you follow crypto, is Ethereum and the Ethereum blockchain merges and changes coming up. I'm not going to go into this too in depth, but I did want to mention it because it is a pretty big news piece, because it has been attempting to happen for a long time now. I want to say, gosh, a good 6 months or so now they've been trying to do this merge. And if you're not familiar with it, what is it? Well, you have really two ways to really do blockchain. One is called proof of stake. The other one is called proof of work. Proof of work is the older way. It's what the original Bitcoin was built around, and Ethereum as well. Most new ones are what we call proof of stake. Why is proof of stake necessarily better? Each one has their benefits and downsides, but the big benefit for proof of stake, much, much lower energy consumption. Proof of work requires a lot of computation. When you think about a Bitcoin miner or the big crypto miners and the big rigs and with big GPUs and lots of fans and taking all the energy, they're typically proof of work. So by moving over to proof of stake, hopefully that will alleviate some of the concerns around that in Ethereum. The two big downsides to Ethereum have always been it tends to be a little slower than a lot of the others, and it tends to be a power hog. So this will at least start to fix some of that, and we'll lay the foundation for more improvements over time as well. With that, I'm going to wrap up Cloud News of the Week. Coming up right after the break, we are going to be talking about Kubernetes cost optimization.
Buffering. How annoying. Did you know that 17 out of 20 people stop watching a video because of stalling and rebuffering? Don't let your users click away to a competitor's site. If your business lies in online media, rely on CDN77 to deliver a seamless online experience to your audience. CDN77 is one of the leading global providers of content delivery network services. They power the world's most popular websites and apps, such as Udemy, ESL Gaming, live sports TV, and social media platforms. Aside from their massive and redundant global network, you're going to love their no BS attitude and skilled team of engineers ready to help 24/7. No chatbots, no tickets bouncing around unresolved for days, just people who know your use case and can immediately help you pinpoint and fix the problems. Don't wait until your users run out of patience. Go to cdn77.com/cloudcast and ask for a free trial with no duration or traffic limits. That's cdn77.com/cloudcast. And we're back. And folks, as we get closer and closer to KubeCon North America in Detroit, end of October of this year, you know, we've been spending a little more time this summer throughout the last few weeks and so forth, really kind of digging into the things that are kind of adjacent to the core Kubernetes project. We've obviously talked about that quite a bit. And, you know, we've been looking at more and more areas in which as more people deploy Kubernetes, as more people optimize their Kubernetes, as they look to kind of expand where it's being used and so forth, we continue to look at areas in which, you know, there's technologies, there are new ways of thinking about how to make those environments better, how to make them more efficient, how to make them you know, more responsive to your business in order for you to be able to go solve business problems and not have to think about Kubernetes so much. So, you know, we continue to kind of dig into that. And, you know, one of the things that we love to do on this show is not only look at the new technologies that are making that happen, but also, you know, new companies that are, you know, at the forefront of making that happen. And so today we're really excited to kind of do both those things. So really excited to have Shahar Yakov, who is product manager at Granulate, who is an Intel company. Shahar, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Hey, Brian. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so excited. You know, we love having new companies. You know, we love having companies focusing on new areas. Tell us, you know, before we dive into Granulate and all the things you guys are doing, tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, ultimately what you guys focus on at Granulate.
Sure, yeah. So first of all, my name is Shahar Yakov. It's really hard to pronounce it in Hebrew, in English, because it's an Hebrew name. And so Shahar Yakov, currently working as a product manager at Granulate. I started my journey around a decade ago as a software engineer in the Israel Defense Force. And since then, I had the opportunity to work with different companies and specialized mostly on the DevOps side and CI/CD aspect, and sometimes about the monitoring and observability. I did a transition from a software engineer into product manager somewhere in the middle. And right now, as I said, I'm working on Granulate. Really excited about that because I have the opportunity to both use my technical skill that I got from my technical background and my product management skills.
Yeah, no, that's great. We've had a number of alumni of Israeli Defense, really, really smart people. They train you very well. You work on very challenging problems. So yeah, when we see those folks move into the technology product space, we always know that there's really good foundation there. Let's start by talking. You know, I highlighted at the beginning, we're going to talk a little about cost optimization. As you think about it as a product manager, as to, you know, how you help companies that are running Kubernetes or any large compute environment, like, how do you think about, you know, what are the things that we can do to help people around cost optimization? What's the bigger picture, the way you think about it?
Yeah. So I think you highlighted it pretty good. Right now it's pretty important to understand where your money goes to. What is the cost that you are paying for your environment, whether it is like on-premise environment or cloud environment.
Yep.
It doesn't matter, because right now the burn rate, it's pretty important thing to understand, where the bear market and the bull market, everything, the chain, the economics. So understanding how to improve your margins, I think it's pretty important right now.
Right.
And as an optimization company, we have multiple solutions. Yeah, we have multiple solutions in our portfolio, mostly focusing on cost optimization and performance optimization. And also, when we are focusing on performance optimization, most of the time, we translate those kind of optimization, those kind of performance optimization, into cost optimization. There are some times when we translate them into improvement of the SLA and competitive SLAs and that stuff. But mostly, what care of the company that we are working on, what really care about them, and what the biggest pain point of them is the cost. How much they pay for the cloud provider, how much they pay for their infrastructure, and they want to eliminate it. And I think the the first thing to understand is like, this is important to understand. And the step where the company gets to the point where they need to understand like how much they're paying for stuff, sometimes it gets like too far from the point where it's important to understand that. And so we think the first and foremost thing to understand is that cost optimization is important, that needs to be handled. And I think this is the most important point to understand right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, and you highlight something that's really important, and this isn't always obvious. You know, what I've found having worked around Kubernetes for a long time is, you know, there's a period of time when people are just getting started, they're trying to figure out the technology, and oftentimes, you know, they'll look at other things. They look at, say, cost optimization or even security or stuff, and they say, well, we only have one cluster right now. I don't really need to worry about those things. And what inevitably happens, and we see this time and time again at different companies, once they figure out the basics of making things work and they realize, okay, I can help deploy applications faster, we can scale them automatically, like their ramp up is really fast. And I think what you're really highlighting is, while the ramp up in terms of getting applications can go fast, like the cost can grow really quickly too. And you need to be thinking about that early in the process rather than waiting till you get those first big bills and then not knowing what to do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And as I said, there are several ways to look at that. There is the, like, you can look at that in many points of view. The first one, you can look at that on a cost visibility view, like where the money goes to, which services are cost the most, what the resources that derive the most cost and the like wasting the most of money or investing the most of money. The second way to look at that, it's like, how do I manage my infrastructure better? How do I manage the different resources, the node pools from Kubernetes or auto-scaling groups from a VM-based application, compute-based application? And our approach at Granite is looking at that on a really unique and other way from a point of view of the application. Since, as you said, the application is really, really dynamic. And as the company, the massive growth, the rapid growth, as the company grows, it's become like the hardest place, the most densified area for the company, because microservices age, microservices like pop every day or two in the environment. And from a company that runs like 2 to 3 deployments, it's become really very fast, like hundreds of deployments and multiple clusters and multiple staging, and most of them in the production. So as our approach is to look at that in the application level layer, looking at it from the application level perspective.
Okay. Yeah. And I was going to ask that. You sort of led me into my next question. It's, there's always ways you can focus. Do you focus on infrastructure? Do you focus on application layer? You know, kind of walk me through a little bit as your products and platform are looking at the application layer. What are some of the common things that you see and you know, some of the areas that people often make mistakes or have, you know, problems that lead them to higher bills?
Yeah, sure. So as I said, our first solution were to check to get cost reduction through performance improvement. So we had our first solution in the portfolio, the continuous runtime optimization, which trying to identify utilization pattern in your application. And then by identifying this pattern, we know how to leverage all this pattern and open the bottlenecks, pop some bottlenecks in your application. And that most of the time leads to performance improvement, which be translated into cost optimization. Okay. But as we look at that from the Kubernetes point of view, and I want to dive a little bit to that, is that looking on the Kubernetes point of view, it's like become pretty different. It's like behave pretty different. Because as a Kubernetes containers work, if you improve the performance, the utilization part of each application, the utilization part, this is not mean necessarily that anyhow your compute or your cost is improved, because Kubernetes, the way it works, the scheduler part of Kubernetes, it's just taking those atomic boxes, which we call deployment, workload, pods, whatever, and taking those atomic boxes and trying to locate them into the different nodes. And by locating those boxes into the nodes, this is how the orchestration, the Kubernetes orchestrator works, the scheduler works. And But yeah. So what we actually did for our Kubernetes users, we did the first phase of the performance improvement. We reduced the utilization part, but we showed them the performance improvement, they didn't achieve any significant cost reduction immediately. So we put our investigator and the researcher hat and trying to understand why the immediate cost reduction haven't achieved. So after investigating that a bit, we identified the over-provisioning gap. And by what I mean by say over-provisioning is that there is the requested resource from Kubernetes, the requested value that each deployment or pod like set, and there is the utilization part of that. And there is a huge gap, sometimes a huge gap, sometimes a little bit less, but there is a gap between the actual reserved resources to the actual utilized resources. And without changing the requested resources, cost reduction can be achieved. Because, as I said, Kubernetes works on the atomic box determined by the reserved spot. And that's what we actually do. We're looking at the application level from the requested resources point of view.
Yeah, it's a little bit, you know, so sometimes in technology, we see the same problems come up again from one generation to the other. So we used to see back in the days of virtualization, people were buying really big boxes to run an application, and they vastly underutilized them, but because, you know, they just knew they had overhead. They worried more about, okay, I don't want the box to be overrun. And Kubernetes came along and sort of told everybody, hey, we're gonna schedule your stuff, we're gonna automate it. And everybody went, oh, that's great. That's gonna be really good. But it's like you said, Kubernetes does exactly what you tell it to do. So if you tell it to take a bunch of resources to deploy things, it's gonna do that perfectly well. And it's gonna make sure you always have those resources. And I think what you're really highlighting is some of the same problems we used to have with virtualization, which was people tend to over-provision things just because they're not sure how the application's going to run, or they're worried about memory leak or whatever. And so we're sort of coming back to the same challenge again, just in a new, you know, in a new environment. And given how fast Kubernetes works versus, you know, the old days of virtual machines, you know, you need systems more paying attention to this than just people with a spreadsheet that look at it once a month.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you start using Kubernetes, you are assuming that everything will work out of the box. Everything will work perfectly. Right. And nothing special will happen. Nothing, you know, intervention from your side should be happen. But as we like check that around, check the usage of Kubernetes, we understand that like there are two main challenges for Kubernetes users. The first challenge is to set those requested resources for each container, because this is not like something that you can understand prior to the setting of this value. You can't really know what should be the value. So it's most of the time I'm set in a copy paste from another container. It's sometimes a trial and error.
Right.
But in trial and error, there is some risk, right? You get out of memory, you get throttling. So like this approach was really hard because like most of Kubernetes users want to utilize both the vertical scaling concept and the horizontal scaling concept. But utilizing and like leveraging both of them to improve, to get like maximum cost reduction, it become really complex. So this was like the first challenge that we faced. And the second challenge that we saw that happening is like there are different persons in each company that in charge of different areas. So as you know, Kubernetes allow us to like move some of the ability to the engineers so they can build fast microservices, they can deploy them really fast. There are CI/CD tools that do it for you. But has that like this all area moved to the engineering, and they need to set the values of like the CPU and memory requested for each container. There are other departments, which is the DevOps department, that's in charge of the budget. So, you know, as the engineering setting the values, the DevOps department need to like give the explanation why is the budget and why the billing is that high. And like this beam silo become like really challenge in many companies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Granulate just recently launched a product, a service, SaaS service called gMaestro, your product. Tell us a little bit about how it works. You know, what are the most common ways that people start using it and some of the benefits they see?
Yeah, sure. So first and foremost, like the motivation behind the project was to solve those two big challenges that the company, that the community has. And what solution, the GMSO solution, what actually does is like continuous right sizing your pods and your workloads. And we achieved really good result, around 60% cost reduction from a right sizing operation. And actually, it's pretty straightforward concept. We just remove the gap or reduce the gap between the utilized resources to the reserved resources. And the way we do it in technical manners, we just deploy a single pod into a cluster. First, we provide full visibility into the Kubernetes cluster, showing all the deployment information, the deployment utilization, whether it's deployment, rollout, stateful set, all the Kubernetes object. And second, a few minutes after, we provide the first state of recommendation on how to right size the workload in your Kubernetes. And we provide and we generate those kinds of recommendations by checking out all the peak usage on your workloads, taking into consideration out of memory and throttling effect that already happened. And checking, like, we want to make sure that you don't need to compromise on your competitive SLA. And that's actually how we build the recommendation. We build the recommendation for you. We show it to you. And the continuous part of that is that we allow you to apply those recommendations with the click of a button. And we make sure that every time your workload change, as it is pretty dynamic, we right size your workload again, over again. So you always like use the least resources needed to handle the load that the workload needs to be handled.
Okay, good. So it's not sort of a one-time scan and it's continuous sort of, it's watching what's going on, making recommendations. And are the recommendations done on a dynamic basis? Does it sort of see what's there and fixes it for you or gives recommendations back to the user and they, you know, they can decide what changes to make or what, you know, what areas to evolve?
Yeah, so it really depends on the user. It can take those recommendations. We provide the required YAML changes. We provide the patch command to update the workload, the deployment that the recommendations will generate on. But if the user wants, we can apply them for them, and ensure that, as I said, this continuous solution, we ensure that every time that the workload changes, as the time passes and the utilization patterns change as well, and there are like different peaks and different spikes, we can take that into account and make sure that every time and every change that the workload changes, we are making sure, as I said, that the workload remain the right size.
Now, do you find some optimizations are sort of more immediately impactful, or you know, some are more focused long term? Like, how do once people sort of see what's available to help them? How do they tend to think through it? Is it okay? These are immediate because they're just, you know, they're too big and bulky, and then others are you're making little tiny incremental things over time. What tends to happen as they see the optimizations presented to them?
So most of the time, people, when they see the recommendations, they want to figure out how we generate those kind of recommendations. And after checking a recommendation of two and making sure that this is a quality recommendation, they can apply it. And most of the time, after applying those recommendations, the cluster, Kubernetes cluster autoscaler does its magic and reducing the nodes and the nodes amount. Sometimes when the cluster is like a static cluster, you need to change it manually, and we provide the recommendation to change that manually for you as well. But most of the time, Kubernetes does it magic by itself. But I think the concept of right sizing is like, after you right size your workload one time, you need to make sure to right size your workload every time and continuously. Since if your workload wasn't right size in the first place, it can end up out of memory, it can end up throttling, and there is also a lot of waste in terms of resources. But once you right size your workload, you need to make sure that it remains right size over time. So like the first impact should be immediate. And as the time goes, you just make sure that you don't waste much more resources and you're running on the most optimized way.
Gotcha. And GMaestro is deployed as a SaaS service, correct?
Yeah, it's a SaaS service. You can open our platform, from the Granite site, open the GMaster platform, sign up. It's a free offering. You can use it for free. Check out the recommendation and start using it right now on multiple cluster, on multiple applications as well.
Gotcha. And will it work for, obviously it'll work for workloads, Kubernetes workloads in the cloud. Will it also work if a cluster is on premises?
Yeah. So if you have like an internet connection from your VPC, from your on premises, and you can allow outbound networking, it will be no problem to connect our GMaster to your platform.
Okay, that's excellent. That's excellent. So we've talked a little bit. Obviously, we could spend a lot of time going in depth. For people that are looking at this and they're going, yeah, we're beginning to see this sprawl of clusters in our Kubernetes environment. We're starting to, get some bills that we don't love. What are some of the best ways for companies to engage with not only the GMaestro platform, but also potentially engage with your team?
Sure. So they can open our website, runai.io, check the different solutions we have. They say the runtime optimization solution and the pod right sizing solution, the GMaestro. GMaestro, it's pretty easy. You just need to sign up and deploy our GMaestro pod, and then you really get an instant recommendation. You can use it on multiple cluster. You can use it on single cluster, whatever they desired. And our other solutions, they just need to schedule a demo with one of our experts.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Yeah, it's the other thing. I think it's really interesting. Granulate is an Intel company. Back in the day, Intel used to make a lot of investments to drive more and more CPU usage, video and other things. It's really interesting to see them evolve to now looking at, how do we be really efficient with the CPUs that you're using, the compute that you're using, because it's so easy now for people to drive more usage. There's lots of business projects that drive more compute usage and AI and data science and stuff. So it's really good to see them being on the other side and giving people access to tools that make them efficient as well. So that's exciting to see. Last question. What's the best way? Give us an example. What are the best ways for folks to engage with your team? What are some of the kind of earliest ways to beyond just signing up for the account? Do you see, what are maybe some of the immediate types of things that you hear feedback from people, like, hey, we just saved a bunch of money, or we were surprised we could optimize some things? What are some of the early stories you hear back from people using the platform?
Yeah, so we launched our platform around a month ago. We got some pretty amazing feedback from the community. And we have a Slack channel, Slack community, which we answer questions from the community. We answer for any support provided over there. But if someone needs to contact us, this is a great channel to do so. But we got a great feedback. We already checked that platform before releasing it to global available. We checked that in our internally current customer, and we achieve amazing cost reduction around an average of 60%. It depends on how much the environment was over provisioned before our first solution, but most of the time it was over provisioned, as I said. I think the best way to contact us is just join the community, join the Slack community, talk with us. You can send me a private message. You can send me a link in LinkedIn message. But this will be the best way to do so.
Excellent. Excellent. Good stuff. I appreciate the time today. It was really, really good, not only to speak to you again, but also to learn more about what Granulate and what the GMaestro platform is doing. So folks, as always, we've been highlighting more and more around Kubernetes, not only how to, run the platform, keep you up to date with the technology. But with that, we want to thank him for his time. We want to thank all of you for listening each week, for telling a friend, for helping us grow the show and grow the community. And with that, I'm going to wrap it up and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.